Everyone is searching for answers. Everyone is searching for answers. Who am I? Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? What is going to happen to me? Do I have a special destiny? These and many more questions haunt our thoughts, and many of the answers can be found in the secret behind the day of your birth. Your birthday identifies you as one of the 52 cards in the deck, which in turn reveals many things about you and your life. Stay tuned today as we explore your destiny with me, Robert Lee Camp. This might be your date with destiny.
Good evening, everybody. This is Robert Lee Camp coming to you live from California, where the sun is setting, and it's been a beautiful, cool day. Not a really hot day. Got maybe to 80 degrees today. Welcome back. I hope you guys are having a wonderful day today. We have a very interesting show tonight planned. This is our comeback show, the first of many more, I hope. And you know, we had such a great response 2 weeks ago in our show, and it really connected me with the fact that I really love doing this and that it's worth it to me on many levels. And as a diamond, that's important. So here I am back, and I'm hoping that everybody who's been listening is going to be willing to participate in the show tonight, and because we're going to have our regular show where I'm going to do a little talk and we're going to have some readings, and then I'm going to introduce you to some very interesting information about something that I love dearly, which is the knowledge and the spirituality of ancient India, which is where I feel I have a very strong connection in my own life. And that's going to come after we do a little bit of our regular show here. And the phone lines will be open. There are three lines you can call in on. If you go to the BBS radio website and look there on the late night, it tells you the phone numbers you can call in. And after I give my short little talk, we'll be opening up the lines, and you can call and ask questions. And you can ask about anything. And during the show, during the music portion of the show, you can also ask questions, but not questions about your personal life. But if you have any questions about the things I'm discussing and talking about, or any experiences that you'd like to share of your own that are similar, or in a similar vein, I would love to have you come on and talk with me. So we'll look for that. We'll see if there's any calls coming in as we get into that portion of the show. But just remember that if you're calling about a destiny reading, it has to be in the first part of the show or any kind of information about the cards, okay? For those of you who don't know, there's also a little chat room. If you're on the BBS radio website, there's a thing, a link on there somewhere, I can't tell you exactly where, about being in a chat room. And there is a Destiny chat room set up. And you can actually log on there and ask questions if you don't want to talk on the phone. You can actually type in a question, get into that chat room, and type in a question, and you're able to, I'll be able to see what you write down, okay? So welcome again to the show tonight. We're going to begin by talking about today. Today is June 4th, and it's a very special day for me because it's my Jupiter day of the week. Mondays are always my Jupiter days. And this day happens to have very, very good astrological influences, okay? So you might have noticed that today went fairly well. There might have been some things, but overall, because there was harmony in the world around, in the planets, everybody has a fairly good day on days like today. There was more harmony than normal, and there will be tomorrow, too, and the next day. The next 3 days are going to be also quite nice. Actually, the best of this month, the best days of June are now. So I hope you're enjoying it. Today happens to be a King of Diamonds day, and today has a ruling card of a Six of Hearts. The most famous person I know that's born today is Angelina Jolie, who's married to Brad Pitt, and who's really busy making a family and making babies and having babies and adopting babies and making babies. Bruce Dern is also born this day. Ruth Westheimer, who was Dr. Ruth, and Dennis Weaver. These are people that are all born on this day. But Angelina Jolie, she personifies the King of Diamonds woman. I don't know if you've noticed, but, you know, she's beautiful, but she's also very, very strong. You get a sense that she's a strong-willed woman. She does what she wants to do. She calls the shots her way. And this is typical of women who are King of Diamonds. Let's see, who's the other ones I was thinking of that were really important, that were really famous? Well, there's who played in, what's the movie? Oh, gosh. My mind goes blank sometimes just when I try to think of people. I'm going to give you a couple of other people. One that's been in the news a lot lately who's very pig-headed, and that's another quality of King of Diamonds is to be very pig-headed and to do things their own way is Lindsay Lohan. I talked about her a little bit. She's just known to be just do everything her way. And there's another famous singer named Michelle Branch who's very, very successful in music, and she's a King of Diamonds. And so you'll notice that women who are King of Diamonds are all very, very businesslike and very, very strong. And today's their birthday. I hope all these King of Diamonds ladies are having a great birthday today. I was looking at Angelina's cards for her year coming up, and I think that though normally she basically gets to tell Brad Pitt exactly what to do and have him do whatever she wants, this year I think he's going to be a little bit more, he's going to kind of keep out of the picture a little bit and go off and do things on his own. That's the feeling I get when I look at the spread of her and him this year. Him showing up in a Uranus position for her this year. But we'll see how things evolve. The main focus of the year for her is Four of Hearts. That's home and family. So she's really going to be focusing more on kids. I just don't know how many more, but it's in the rumor that that's what she's into. She wants to make more and more babies. So let's all wish her well on that. You know, I've talked about this topic before, but I want to talk about it a little bit more tonight, and that is about relationships, and especially about how relationships are a mirror of ourselves. I had this friend that I knew when I was a child, and we were kind of boyfriend and girlfriend a little bit. I mean, we might have kissed once or something, but we were only like 8 years old, 10 years old. But she was my sister's best friend, and she grew up to be a really beautiful and successful woman. And, you know, we lost contact with her for 20 or 30 years, and then my sister somehow connected with her again, and I got a chance to see her and talk to her. And it was just amazing because here is this beautiful woman who is just so attractive and so vivacious and so full of life, and she's married to this guy who totally abuses her and just uses her for her money. And she had more money than him. She got him started in a business. He made all kinds of money with her money, and he was having affairs, and he would always call her and tell her how ugly she was. And all these things were happening, and I thought, you know, this is really strange. You know, why would somebody who could have anybody like her end up with a man like that, and why would she stay in that relationship? And I'm sure that some of you have met people like this before. You've met people, and you go, you know, you're in this abusive relationship. Why don't you get out of it? I myself was in a couple of abusive relationships. It wasn't physical abuse, but it was verbal abuse. And I remember after I saw that I had a pattern going there, that I had two in a row, I remember thinking, you know, this is not about them, because I was always fighting with them and telling them to do this and don't do that. And I realized that there was something in me that needed to be looked at. And I realized that those two women criticized me because I criticized myself. So really, it turns out that whatever partner we have, and you can look at your partner right now, whoever you're with in a relationship, that partner is a mirror of you, of how you treat yourself, or a mirror of where you are in your life. I've also had clients, lots of them, they just keep attracting men who can't commit. They keep attracting a guy who can't make a commitment. Well, I have to, even though some of these women are cards that are, or birthdays that are marriageable, for whatever reason, when they're going through a phase like that, it means that they're not ready for commitment. So I've developed this technique over the years, or this thing I remember. Whenever I meet a woman who has been attracting a series of relationships that where the guy can't commit, I'll ask her, who was it that really hurt you in the last 5 years? And almost invariably, there was a relationship in her past, maybe 3 years, maybe 5 years, but before this period, when she really got hurt so bad that on an unconscious level, she decided, I'm not going to really commit anymore to anybody. I'm not going to get that involved with anybody. Now, this decision that she made was made unconsciously. That's the problem. The only problem is that she doesn't know she made that decision. So now she's going about trying to find a relationship, and she thinks she wants a relationship, but in fact, she keeps attracting men that can't commit because she's not really ready to get into a relationship. And she's already decided she doesn't want to get into a deep relationship. So there can be this dialogue. Now imagine that same woman. Imagine if she's got family that are on her going, well, why aren't you going to get married? Imagine if there's some family pressure there for this woman to have marriage in her life. So then she can really get into, oh, what's wrong with me? There's something wrong with me. I keep attracting these men who can't commit. What's wrong? The universe hates me. God hates me. I'm doomed. I'm unlucky. I'm unattractive. There's not enough good men in the world. All these things. And really, all of that is coming from one place. It's coming from inside of her that she has made up her mind on a deep level that she does not want to get close to anybody again because she cannot afford to be hurt again. Okay? So the clue is that she's attracting, the clue here that helps us to get in touch to find out what's really going on is to look at who she's attracting. So whenever I do a reading for somebody and there's relationship stuff to talk about, I'm always very interested in who are they dating, how many people are they dating if it's more than one, what kind of people, what their birthdays are, because, you know, when I see these women keep attracting all these unmarriageable cards, and there's a lot of them, you know, if you, for those of you who don't know, if you read in the back of Love Cards, there's a chapter about who's marriageable in my book, Love Cards. And it gives every card in the deck a ranking of basically how marriageable or unmarriageable they are. The higher the number, the more unmarriageable you are. And there are some cards in there that are tens, like a five of clubs, like an ace of diamonds. Like a jack of diamonds. There's a lot of cards that they really, their marriage potential is very low for lots of reasons. Their commitment potential is really what's low. It's not marriage potential, not so much as it is commitment. There are people that will get married and they'll just have affairs. You know, there's all kinds of ways it can play out. But the point here is that we look at the relationship we're in and that will tell us about the person. I use that. I use that in my readings extensively. I always want to know who is in a person's life. What's the quality of the person? You know, what's that other person saying? Because if this other person is not, if this person that we're attracting is not ready to commit, we're not ready to commit. But on the other levels, though, the people that we attract, the people that we're with, are mirrors of how we treat ourselves. We always attract somebody who treats us the way that we already treat ourselves. That's a fact, and you see that. So when you see somebody who's in an abusive relationship where they're being abused, should you really get really angry at the abuser, the person abusing them? I mean, you can, of course. And I'm not saying that the person that's abusing the other person is not doing something wrong. But one has to always question the victim here and to see, like, why would you attract this? Why would you keep having this? Why would you keep coming back? Why would you not just end it immediately? And it always comes down to, if I attract abusive relationships, it's because I abuse myself. In other words, I don't like myself. I'm mad at myself. I'm upset at myself. Or I think there's something wrong with me and I deserve to be punished. So I want somebody there to punish me. You know, there's a connection in the cards called the Saturn connection in terms of relationship. We can attract somebody that has a Jupiter, a Venus, a Mars, a Mercury, a Moon, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, or Saturn. And Saturn connection has a specific quality to it. If I meet you and I'm your Saturn card, I will, in spite of myself, I will be critical of you. I will see faults in you. And I will want to tell you what you can do that you should do. And the word should is connected with this planet Saturn quite a bit. The things you ought to do and you should do to make your life better. So the Saturn person will want to teach the person they're Saturn to, will want to point out their mistakes and correct them, and you feel really justified in doing it. You feel really right about doing it because it's the way the energy is flowing. And everybody alive has some card that they are Saturn to, and you have somebody who's Saturn to you. There is, our Saturn card would be our critic. Mine happens to be the Seven of Clubs. If I meet a Seven of Clubs person, I know that they have the capacity and what it takes to find flaws in me and tell me about them. And I've learned to use that to my advantage in some cases. Like I have a Seven of Clubs guy who always looks at my newest software offerings and finds all the mistakes in it for me. It's perfect. But I wouldn't necessarily choose to be in a relationship with somebody who was Saturn to me, because that person would be constantly reminding me of what's wrong with me and probably not so inclined to say things nice to me. And if it gets really bad, it could be a form of abuse. It could be verbal abuse or even worse in some situations. So whenever I see a person, I hear about a woman in the news, and there are men, too, that get abused, but it's more usually a woman. You know, I feel my heart goes out to these people that are being abused, but I also know that the real problem is not that person out there, that perpetrator. The real problem is within the person. The real problem is loving themselves, confronting the fact that, hey, I don't like myself. I need this person in my life. So what's really interesting about, you know, relationship is that we don't really know. Nobody really knows why we're attracted to the people that we are. Like, you know, we don't usually question it. We don't usually say, well, you know, what's really going on here? Is it I just like cute butts, or is it that, you know, I like men who've got the certain kind of hands, or is it, you know, what is it? I like men that have money. You know, we always come up with mental things, and we try to put a label on everything we do. But in fact, this process of attraction, of what we're attracted to in a relationship, comes from a completely unconscious place in us. It's not a conscious place in most cases. Now, there may be some exceptions to that. There may be some people who can make a conscious choice. But by and large, that's an unconscious choice. We're attracted to people for something that we don't know why. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's the point. And why we're attracted to people, okay? So this attraction comes from another place. And where this comes from is that in many cases, there are parts of us that we can't see, like we can't see something about ourselves. And we will attract somebody that can show us that, who mirrors that for us. And the point of it is so that we can see ourselves better. And the point of that is the even deeper underlying purpose is so that we can love and embrace all that we are. So if I'm a person, for example, this has happened many times. I've had clients who their card is one of these freedom-loving, unmarriageable cards. But they themselves, if you talk to them, they'll swear up and down, I am the most committed person in a relationship. I always commit. I'm there. I'm loyal. I'm steady. I never think about leaving, but I always attract a partner who does. Well, the cards are cool because the cards can say, well, listen, you know, the cards show that you're the person here that's got the lack with the commitment problems. And sometimes just them knowing that, seeing that possibility, seeing that, you know, maybe the commitment problem lies within me, and I keep attracting partners to show it to me. I need to see it. And because I can't see it, because I'm so blind to it for whatever reason, and it can be childhood pressure or some other reason that we can't allow ourselves to imagine being uncommitted in a relationship. We have become blind to it so much that we have to have a living Technicolor person in 3D right there in front of us showing us that for us to see it. So this is how it is. If you look at your partner is a living, breathing role model there. They're a person that you created on some level to help you see yourself. All of us have our partners there to help us see ourselves. And this applies to the good things too, not just the bad. It's the bad things that cause the problems though, because if our partner is showing us something bad, if we're so unaware of it because we've never really gotten in touch with it, we're going to blame them. We're going to blame our partner. We're going to get mad at them. Like, why are you doing this to me? You make me feel this. You make me do that. You make me mad. You do all this stuff. And we rarely look at ourselves and realize, hey, if I'm upset, why am I upset? Maybe there's something about me. So this is really the beautiful thing about relationships. And we really have to be willing to take a look at ourselves and the relationship. And I'm telling you, this is the hardest thing. I've said it before 100 times probably, but mastery of relationship is much harder than other issues that we face in life, because it's the area where most of us are the most blind and the most prone to blame. I mean, it's easier to take responsibility in other areas of our life than it is in the area of relationship, because people get so close to us and these things about us are so hidden. I mean, I've met people that were such unmarriageable cards and they stayed married for 10, 15 years, and it wasn't until 25 years later that it dawned on them that they really loved their freedom, and they had a series of spouses and mates that cheated on them and did everything else in the book until they realized it was in them. And then once they realized it was in them, then they had a choice in the matter. Then they could choose. And this is the whole point of everything, really. It's about awareness. If we can become aware of ourselves, if we can embrace what we see and own it as our own, we're able to transcend it. We're able to then have a choice in the matter, whereas before that, we don't really have a choice. So this is really the underlying principle behind relationships, and it's also the underlying principle behind what we're attracted to, who we're attracted to. And I can tell you that it's only after we are able to see the dark side, understand it, and embrace it within ourselves, it's only after that, and not fight against ourselves, but just be willing to accept ourselves as we are, that we're then able to attract a partner that is a mirror of how nicely we treat ourselves. And then we're ready to have a really great relationship. That's how it works. So if you've had a string of bad relationships, and you haven't had a good one yet, that's still in your future. You have some time to still have that experience in your life. Hey, that's good news. You're going to have that in your future if you don't give up, if you don't let go and just completely give up. So that's my little talk for the night about relationships. I hope that was helpful for some of you. Now, the lines are open. I believe we have all the lines open right now. We had Marilyn Ryan on the phone, but I think she got tired of waiting. So if you want to call in, we're going to take a short break and have a commercial break here. And then when we come back, we're going to do questions and answers. So now's the time to call in if you're planning to call in this evening. I'd love to talk to you, so give us a call. We're going to be right back after this short break.
For centuries, the information was kept hidden from society. Preserved by a secret order, instructed never to reveal this esoteric knowledge until the world was ready, until a time when this information could do the most good to benefit mankind. And now this information has finally been revealed, the fabled Book of Destiny, with information about every aspect of your life. And now you can make use of this information for your highest good. You can discover just why you are here and where you are going. Who are you most compatible with? When will you move? When will you change jobs, find love, get married, and make the most money? All of this information and more is now available to you in two books, The Cards of Your Destiny and Love Cards by Robert Lee Kemp. These books are available in any bookstore, physical or virtual, but if you order them from SevenThunders.com, you will also receive a special report entitled, When Will You Become a Millionaire? This special report will tell you the times in your life when you are the most likely to experience massive financial success. To get both books, which teach you how to do these readings for yourself, step by step, plus this one-of-a-kind report at a special discounted rate, just point your web browser to SevenThunders.com. That's the number 7 and the word thunders.com. Look for the link talking about the radio show special. And within days of ordering, you will receive everything you need to do readings for yourself and others. Your satisfaction is always guaranteed for your money back. And now, back to our show.
Well, we're back, and I believe we have Marilyn on the phone, who's been waiting, and she called back. She's been very patient. So, Marilyn, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
Good. I heard you wanted to ask a question about your son, was it?
I did, and I know your program tonight was more or less about love-style relationships.
Well, that's, well, the talk doesn't actually dictate the calls, so
okay.
It's okay.
All right. So,
what's going on?
My son was born on 5/9/1982. He's 25. He's moved back home. He is not working right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a really close relationship in his growing up. His father died when he was almost 10, and we were divorced, but we were friendly. I just feel like he's stuck. You know, he's not. When I was 25, I had a very important job, and I had, like, goals in my life, and he just, you know, he's just, like, stuck. He's looking
mm-hmm.
for a job, but he doesn't have one, and so I just kind of wondered what was going on with him. Maybe you could tell by looking at his cards.
Well,
I have your book, but it's really hard for me to put one and two together and come up with the right answer.
Well, first of all, Marilyn, why do you feel like you have to solve his problems?
Well, I don't feel like I need to solve his problems. I keep asking him to go and do something about it, but he doesn't want to, and I'm,
well,
you know, ready to throw him out, literally.
You know,
but
yeah,
then,
you're not necessarily helping him by, you know, supporting him when he could be out taking care of himself, you know.
I don't fully support him. I give him a roof over his head, but,
yeah,
you know,
does he pay rent?
And he was paying rent when he did have a job, so, but now he's not paying rent, so.
Well, you know, that birthday, everybody's got their own struggles in life, you know.
Okay.
We all do.
Yes.
And it won't really matter what kind of good cards he has or anything. He has to be the initiator of things in his life. And he is a 10 and an ace, and he definitely needs to know that he did it, okay? So even though, you know, it might seem cruel, you need to kick him out. It would help him more
mm-hmm.
to have him go out and make it on his own, because that's all he really wants anyway. Anybody who's a 10 wants to make it on their own. Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
And he's got great cards this year. Really, it'll be great. But he might need a kickstart, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He always feels like he can come home and just, you know, be lazy or whatever.
Well, he does do, you know, he has little jobs every now and then, but, I mean, he doesn't have a goal or aspiration that I know of. He's finished school, you know, and he's, there he is. So you think I should kick him out, huh? Just give him an ultimatum?
Well, you know, he needs to know, okay, he's at this age where he has to learn to take care of himself, right?
Right.
Unless you want to keep him there, do you want to keep him in
your
house?
No. It gets in my way.
Right, and you know, so, I mean, it's hard. You know, it's hard when you're a parent, but it's so hard because we want the best for our kids, and I think there's a cutoff time though that when we should stop stepping in there for our kids. You know, and this is not a real severe example of that with your son. But he's got great cards. I think that, you know, I think you letting him standing on his own 2 feet would be the best thing for him.
All right. Well, what about our relationship?
Well, you know, you got a lot of Mars with him.
So that's our butting each other's head all the time.
Yeah, he's always going to irritate you. That's always,
and do I irritate?
He's always going to irritate you, and... But you're also moon to him, so, you know, you can't help but want to take care of him, too, see?
Mm-hmm.
It's a combination of both, okay? It's a combination of irritation, but there's a moon connection which makes you close and gives you the desire to support him and take care of him, which is also natural for a mother, okay?
Yes.
So, but... His situation is that he's a 10, and, you know, his birthday is a very self-engrossed, self-centered birthday. Do you understand?
Is that the 10, or is that the combination of the 10 and the 2?
It's the fact of both of them. But 10 of diamonds are automatically, but 10 of diamonds, ace of heart, is a double dose. Okay?
Mm.
It's very difficult for them to see beyond their own problems, their own needs, their own desires, their own... whatever. It's hard for them to focus on anybody else but themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of people can get depressed. You know?
Because
mm-hmm. when we're not giving to other people, we don't feel, like, connected, you know? I don't know. I just think the whole thing for him is he's got to go find his way, and however long that takes, it may take him 20 years, Marilyn.
Uh-huh.
You got to let him have his way. I mean... I didn't find my work until I was in my late 30s.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you say that, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I did. I wasn't unsuccessful. I had ambition all the time, but I still hadn't found the thing I was looking for.
Well, you'd think with a diamond, he would have some ambition.
Maybe, but see, the Ace of Hearts is very introverted.
Hmm. Okay.
It is ambitious, It's in his own way. So I can't tell you. You have a 9 of Hearts in Saturn right now. You know that, right?
Yes.
Those are hard cards.
So what does that mean for me?
Well, it means that you're afraid to let go of him.
But I need to.
I think so. What do you think?
Well, I've tried. I mean, it's gotten harsh between us, the words, you know. He'll fix dinner when I come home from work or something, and, you know, it'll be nice again.
Well, you know, it's you have to look long-term at the situation and think about his long-term benefits, you know. What's going to help him? If he doesn't learn to fly, he's going to die, right? So
right.
You got to let him get out there and fly.
Well, what do you think is the best way to do that? Just... say you have to move out now.
Yeah, give him you got to be out here in a month, and that's it. You got to go.
Okay.
Give him a month. Say in a month's time, or sooner if you can get it together. You got to be out. Sorry. No, I love you, but this is not doing either one of us any good. You being here.
Yes. Okay.
That would be my suggestion. I mean, I don't think it's cruel, unusual punishment or anything. He's going to be fine. He's a young guy, you know?
He's not going to hate me for the rest of his life.
Well, he might hate you for like a month.
Yeah.
But he'll get over it.
All right. Okay, I think I already knew what to do. I just needed someone to tell me.
Well, I don't want to tell you what to do, but I just want to give you some perspective on it. You have to be the one that makes your own choices about it, you know.
Yeah.
So you have other things to consider. Consider the whole thing and then make the best choice. But make it the best choice for him.
Okay.
And I can tell you, it's not good for a kid to give him stuff, you know, to not let them earn it and do it on their own. It makes them lazy, and it makes them incapable of taking care of themselves.
Okay.
It's better to encourage children.
Money, so.
What's that?
I don't give him any money.
Don't give him money, absolutely not.
No, I don't do that, but I give him the roof over his head right now, so, you know.
Well, that's okay for now, but don't know there's a deadline.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck. Good luck with that, Marilyn.
Okay. All right, thanks. Bye now.
You're welcome. Okay, we have lines open if anybody's interested in the call. I did get a message from, I believe it's a lady named Jerry, and she asked a question about her husband, who is a Ten of Clubs, and he has a Seven of Diamonds long range this year, and she says, I know this can be the millionaire's card, but does it apply when it's a long range? And the Seven of Diamonds long range can definitely be, it can go either way, okay? And I'm assuming your name is Jerry. I can't say for sure that I know your name is Jerry, but you said Jerry Jim. I imagine your husband's Jim and you're Jerry, so I could be wrong about that. A Seven of Diamonds long range can go either way. It can be either a millionaire's or it can actually take away all your money. I had a Seven of Diamonds long range the year that I went into the deepest level of poverty I ever was in. And then I had a transformation with money and really became sort of like a millionaire overnight because of an internal change. So your husband has a Seven of Diamonds long range, so it just depends on his relationship with money now. I'm inclined to think that he's a Gemini, even though he's born on the cusp. Most people I've met that are born on that birthday are actually Geminis, and if he is, he's an Eight of Diamonds ruling card. And Eight of Diamonds rulers tend to want to spend more money than they make. They tend to spend money in large sums at times. So you have to judge whether you think that's him or not. I think that would probably describe him. And so, you know, this could be a year when either he's going to make a whole lot of money or a year when he learns some lessons about money. It all depends on where he's at. Depends on what his relationship with prosperity is and if he's what he's doing in his work and so forth and so on. Okay, so I hope that answers your question. Okay, well, if we don't have any more call-in listeners tonight, we're going to proceed into our second portion of our show, which is to talk about some things that I'm really dear to from ancient India. I spent 10 years from ages 23 to 33 in a yoga ashram. We just had a call. We're having a call come in here, but so we might take one more call if this person is actually calling in. And while I was there, I really wasn't particularly interested in yoga, to be honest. I was only there because I wanted to achieve a higher consciousness. And the only way that I knew about to achieve that was through yoga. So I had read some books by Ram Dass, and I had searched for a teacher. And so I spent 10 years in a yoga ashram practicing yoga. And I'm going to talk more about that after we talk to Mary Kay, who has just called in and has a question. Are you on the line, Mary? Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Mary Kay.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm calling because I'm kind of feel like I'm in a state of flux. I'm not really sure exactly what my next step is.
What had happened? What has happened recently?
Oh, what hasn't? Recent acquisition of business. Loss of
love. Are you saying that you have recently acquired a business?
No, no. My company was sold, so I'm now with a larger corporation than I was, and so it's just a whole different set of rules and things.
So you were working for a company, they got acquired by somebody else, and now everything's different.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So career-wise, it seems like I'm in a state of flux, and relationship-wise.
What's happened relationship-wise?
I was involved with a gentleman, and it just didn't quite work out the way I had hoped it would, and I'm just what was his birthday? 6/27/1955.
June 27th?
Yes.
So was he a three of clubs?
Yep.
Well, that's a mess.
Yeah, it was.
You have my books, I assume, right?
Yes, I do.
So you knew you going into that this was like an unmarriageable crazy person, right?
Kind of, yeah.
But you went for it anyway.
Yeah, I did.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I know. I was listening to what you said earlier, and I was like, oh,
yeah.
Very interesting about the mirror. Hmm.
Yeah, so why did you attract an unmarriageable person?
I don't know. Well, I guess
well,
like,
what did
I
say
know.
In my talk? What did I say in my talk?
That obviously I'm not as committed as I would like to be.
Well, right now
or
you're
think
not.
I am.
Like, you're going, either you are all the time, or right now you're in a period when you're not really willing to commit.
Mm-hmm.
See, if you really wanted to commit, you wouldn't have even wasted your time on a three of clubs, five of hearts person. By the way, for my listening audience's sake, your birthday is March 28, 1963. Right?
Yeah, that fixed card.
Yeah, you're
that's
an eight of clubs,
to...
but your ruling card is a ten of hearts. And a ten of hearts
yeah.
can be a little bit of a player. Okay?
Oh.
You have it within you to be a little bit of a player yourself. Eight of clubs is not a player, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the ten of hearts can be a player a little bit. So you have a little half and half going on there. Have you been married before?
Yes, I've been divorced for 9 years.
Okay. And have other guys that you've been with been unmarriageable?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, maybe you're still not ready for marriage, you know? Mary Kay, what do you think?
Yeah, maybe. I that's probably true.
Yeah,
there's
so,
a lot
you know,
of healing that needed to be done.
So there's no complaints about the guy that wasn't marriageable because, I mean, you weren't ready either, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all just, you know, water under the bridge.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like when you're ready for a committed relationship,
mm-hmm.
one will appear magically right before you. And how long ago did you break up, by the way?
About 6 weeks ago.
Okay. Because, you know, you got relationship stuff all over your cards this year.
Yeah, I know. That's, yeah.
There's going to be more guys in your life very soon.
Okay.
Okay. You don't have to worry. I mean, it could happen tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what about the whole career thing?
Well,
what, I mean,
you know, this is your pre-birth year, we call it.
Yeah.
That and people 44. Are often confused in the pre-birth year. You know, it's like often a confusing year. It's a year where you feel a little lost sometimes.
Absolutely. That's a very good word for it. That
yeah.
is a very good word for it.
you know. So, you know, Eta clubs, they like to go along and they like everything to be the same, and they get it all figured out and they're good at what they do. But when something like this happens, they don't adapt that well. They're not all so adaptable, you know.
No, I know that of myself.
These things that you had constructed in your mind are now not fitting in with the picture, and you're experiencing discomfort from that and stress from that, see?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, naturally you're in an uncomfortable position, but, you know, honestly, your cards look good.
That's what I thought when I was looking at them for, you know, even for this year, and, you know, I kind of look ahead, and I'm like, okay, they look pretty good. It's just,
Okay, so
that word "lost" is a very good word.
Yeah,
that's exactly how I feel. I feel it.
Well, see, like, yeah, because Eta Club, so you guys pride yourself on really knowing what's going on and making a plan and figuring it all out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're so good at figuring it all out. And when something happens outside of that domain of what you figured out, you know, it causes you to have to rethink everything, which is a big. It's like having to deconstruct a huge brick house. One brick at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's pretty much it. So the ten of hearts doesn't help me with that, eh?
Well, the ten of hearts has an influence saying, you know, really you have to really be willing to do some changing this year. Okay?
Mm-hmm. With regards to what? Just in general or just
your job?
Lifestyle,
you know, like, okay, maybe you do have to change jobs. Maybe this isn't going to work for you the way it is. You know, the typical rule of thumb is when people buy a business that they have to fire everybody because they're all used to the old management, the old management style and all the rules, and they're not willing to be flexible usually. It's better just to fire everybody and hire new people who have no expectations. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's generally a better idea, and most businesses are smart. They do that. I mean, they try to. They'd like to keep people on. They don't want to fire them. But in actuality, they have new ideas and new plans and new ways of doing things.
So,
and they may not even be somebody you like. It's almost like you're married, and all of a sudden somebody comes along and say, well, I'm sorry, we're going to have to trade this partner that you're married to somebody else, and you don't know who this person is. See what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
You
so
have this commitment and all that. Yeah. So, you know, you're displacing a five of spades. You're displacing a five of spades. That means you really have to think about what kind of a change you need to make. I honestly think that this year is going to be more a focus on love than anything else. There are relationships coming your way. There's one significant one coming your way. Okay?
Okay.
So be looking for that. And don't worry so much about the job. Just be mindful of what is best for you. And if it's
mm-hmm.
if it's not really working for you, quit. Or ask him to let you off or something. Okay?
Okay.
I mean, you know, what's the worst that could happen? You go find a new job. I'm sure you're good at what you do.
I am very good at what I do.
Yeah. You need to be with people that appreciate what you do, you know. So don't be so afraid of losing your job, you know. There's something probably better for you just around the corner.
Okay.
Is that helpful?
It is very helpful. I appreciate it.
I love
your books, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Nice talking to you, and I hope you have a pleasant rest of your evening. Stick around for the last part of our show. We're going to have some great music come later.
I will. Thank you.
Okay. Take care,
Bye-bye.
Mary Kay. Bye. Well, a client of mine, an ex-client of mine, an old friend, has just called in. Her name is Lorinda. Is Lorinda still on the line?
Hello?
Looking for Lorinda?
Hi.
Hi, Lorinda.
Hi, Robert.
How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. I kind of, I'm sorry to break the news this way, but I've been wanting to call you and want to have you read some cards for somebody. It's interesting that you started out the show about Angelina Jolie and her dreams and aspirations of being a mom, and you know me and you know what my life is. Same thing. I'm calling because one of my babies just passed away.
Oh, wow.
So he passed away May 3rd, 2007. And,
how did that happen?
Well, I was reading my weekly reading today, and I had his card in Mercury with the Six of Hearts right next to it, and I'm pregnant again, and I do believe that I'm bringing him back. And then right next to it, the Nine of Spades, and it was just a sudden illness. It just came out of nowhere, and he's a Two of Clubs. His karma card, his Ace of Spades karma card, has that coming up, an environment and displacement. So I learned from the Book of Destiny and from your work that this was something that he was fated to do since the day he was born. And,
well, usually when a death happens like that so young, and I mean, the child wasn't even a year old, was he?
No, he was 8 months.
That must have been a terrible tragedy for you.
It was awful, but the most beautiful thing was in my weekly reading that week, I had the King of Spades, I had the Ten of Spades in Neptune, which talked about success connected, could be with water. He was at home with me. He had a little bit of a rough night, and I always sleep with my, give my babies a bath, and they always fall asleep in the bath right away. I got up, I said, I know what he needs. And I went and I gave him a bath. He instantly fell asleep and he just never woke up. He had a home birth. He was born at home. He died at home.
He was in his Saturn period when he died.
What?
He was in his Saturn period when he died.
He did. He was.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm calling too, because when this first happened, I had no answers. And every day it's like a piece of the puzzle, and through your work and the Book of Destiny and through God, I'm healing something that I didn't think I ever could heal from. And, you know, it took a while before I got myself to sit down and read his cards. But the next week after he passed on, my long-range card in my weekly reading was the Two of Clubs. The Ace of Spades was an environment. And, you know, it was meant to be. I have peace. I have answers through the Book of Destiny, and so I had to call you and let you know,
I can't even imagine how that must feel to go through something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you love your children, and you guys, your children is your treasure in your family, you know.
Yeah, I'm right there. They are just my whole life. And the other thing that, is interesting and brings me peace also is that my queen card, the Queen of Clubs, and how in the Book of Destiny it says that sometimes we are called upon to make a sacrifice. Either we sacrifice so much for our children, which I do, or we have to sacrifice a child. And he has his life, I mean, he gave so much, but he also is doing and giving so much through his death, and brought estranged family members together, and just very beautiful. And our spiritual connection has grown, if anything, and I feel him around me all the time. And so that's beautiful. And he's, you know, every week now, I was always very excited on Sunday to do my readings, but now it's like, where is his card going to be? And a couple of weeks after it happened, he was in Mars, and I was angry, you know? How could you leave me? Felt abandoned.
Yeah.
But that passed, you know? I can't be mad at that little guy.
Yeah. Well, it's great to hear from you, Lorinda, and I'm sorry that happened. you know, I don't know exactly what to say, but I know that this coming year you're going to be in the most blessed position.
What's that? Yeah.
This coming year you're in the most blessed position, so good things will be happening. Some wishes will come true this year.
Yeah, I really believe I'm going to reincarnate him. And so, you know, how many people get that? So that's a huge blessing.
That's great.
But I love you, and just thank you for your books and for your work, and that's really why I'm calling.
Well, thank you for calling, Rune. It's great to hear your voice, and I'll send my prayers for you and your family.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Well, I hadn't talked to her in a while. I get emails from time to time, and it's nice because they've been really connected to the system, the whole family, and I'm really sad to hear that about losing her son. I don't know what that would do to me. I think that would destroy me to have that happen, the way I feel about babies and so forth. Anyway, we have one more call. We have Joe from Seattle. He happens to be a joker, I think. Is Joe on the line?
Yes. Hi. Good evening.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I've spoken to you a couple of months ago, and now I'm calling back to ask you another quick question.
Okay, what's the question tonight?
The question tonight is, I had a friend who I read her card, the Eight of Diamonds card.
Uh-huh.
And she had a question in regards to her past life cards. And since I'm December 31st, you know, I don't have all these things that you keep talking about.
Right.
And so I didn't really know what to tell her about the past life card. But she had been in a relationship with this man who was a Nine of Diamonds, and they were together for about a year and a half, and then they all of a sudden broke up. And
yeah,
what was interesting was her long-range card for her year was a Nine of Hearts.
Oh, wow.
And so I read all that information to her, and then I started looking at this other stuff, but she wanted to know what was the connection between the Nine of Diamonds, her past life card, and then her ex-lover was a Nine of Diamonds. Is there any connection, or is that just a coincidence?
You mean between her card and the Nine of Diamonds?
Right. Her
ex-boyfriend, of course there is. Their past life cards. You know, she's an Eight of Diamonds, he's a Nine of Diamonds.
Right.
That's called past life cards, and that's also a moon connection.
Uh-huh.
Past life cards are moon connections. And really what it is, technically speaking, it's a moon connection in the spiritual spread. I gave it a special name, the past life card, because it has such a special significance, where there's such a strong feeling of closeness between the two people.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see.
And it's really good for marriage, but see, it doesn't change the fact, the connection they have never changed the fact that he's a Nine of Diamonds, or either one of those two is a Nine of Diamonds. And Nine of Diamonds have their own little package of issues they carry around with them.
Right.
And her card, the Eight of Diamonds, has its own little package of personal issues that it carries around with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing of it is that, like, that was probably the reason the relationship wasn't successful, was because of the baggage they both brought to the relationship. The compatibility was great.
Right.
Does that help at all?
They each had their own issues that they brought to it, and it just wasn't meant to be, I guess.
Well, you know, Nine of Diamonds can be very hard to live with, because they think that, you know, the whole world owes them a living. They can be arrogant. Eight of Diamonds can be hard because they get bored with relationships and want to be with somebody else.
Right.
So, you know,
yeah,
they both, you know, I don't know, the connection was there, and I'm sure that for a while it was really wonderful. Like, it was probably a really great experience that they shared together, you know.
Right.
But it just wasn't meant to last, because maybe neither one of them is really ready for something lasting at this point, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, that's exactly what happened, because it was great for about a year and a half, and then all of a sudden it just, like, end it. I mean, very quick and sudden and abruptly. And so.
And
anyway.
Who left? Do you know which one of them left?
He left. He sent her an email and said it was over after they had been on vacation together. And she thought everything was going great, and then all of a sudden this happens.
He just took off.
Yeah.
I can't help but laugh at that kind of behavior, you know. I hear about it. I go, like, you know, what is it when somebody just disappears? Because they do that, you know. People just will disappear on somebody. They don't want to face them and say goodbye. They want to just leave.
Well, yeah, and then do it through an email. I mean, come on, an email?
An email, oh, my God.
That's not even a phone call.
This is to let you know that I'm not coming back.
Yeah. And it's
I'm putting a block on your email address.
Oh, too
funny. I don't know. You know, well, life's a three-ring circus, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I read the cards to her, and her card to her. She had never heard of it, and she absolutely loved it, but she hated her card. She didn't like her card.
Oh!
She did not like... She loved the whole concept and all the ideas about the cards and everything. She didn't like her cards. She did not want to be the Eight of Diamonds because of what it said in the book, mainly about working and stuff like that. And that's exactly what she is. I mean, she works so hard. It's unbelievable. And yet she didn't want to, you know, face up to it and say, yeah, that's me.
Well, you know, when I first picked up the book, Sacred Symbols of the Ancients, which was the book that turned me on with cards, and I read about my card, the Queen of Diamonds, I threw that book down, and I said, that is the most negative book I've ever read in my life. And I walked away from it. And then a week later, I was out looking for it.
Uh-huh.
Because it was so right on. But I wasn't ready to handle that, you know?
Uh-huh.
I wasn't ready to handle that much directed right at me like that. And then later, again, I grew to appreciate it. So I can understand how I'm feeling that way.
Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate you calling, Joe. It's good to hear from you. And let everybody know you're a joker. And you're into the cards, but you can't even read your own cards.
I know, I can't. So I have to read everybody else's.
That is so cool. Well, it's nice to hear from you, Joe. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Good talking to you too, Robert. Take care.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, we are going to have a short break here, but what I'm going to do on this break is we're going to play one of the songs off my CD, and this is going to be like the introduction to the rest of the show tonight, which is we're going to talk about some really amazing things about ancient India and about mantras and about the power of bhakti yoga in the Kali Yuga that we're in now. And I hope you'll enjoy this. This first song is called Krishna Hare Krishna. And play the one that says it's Krishna Hare Krishna full, because this one has an om in the beginning, a long om. We're going to start this whole show tonight, this whole part of the show, with an om, and then it goes into from the om right into a chant, and it ends with an om also. So this song is about 7 minutes long, and then when it comes back, I'm going to talk more about my connection to this and all the things that I learned in my 10-year stay at Kripalu Ashram. So hope you guys stick around, and I hope you enjoy it, and you're welcome to call in if you have some comments or questions about things I'll be discussing in the second half, okay? So we're going to play Krishna Hare Krishna, full version, and I'll be back in a few minutes.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. Robert Lee Camp, and this is the part of our show where we're going to talk a little bit about ancient India and the Sanskrit chants and just a lot of things. I want to start by saying that, you know, I was drawn into yoga at the age of 23 because I was searching for the answers in life. I was searching for peace. I was searching for enlightenment. And I had read some books by Ram Dass, and he was very emphatic that the way to enlightenment, at least a way to enlightenment, was yoga, through yoga. Now, I didn't really care for yoga all that much at the time. I didn't think much of it. I never felt naturally drawn to it. But I was really very, very passionate about finding answers to life, peace of mind, enlightenment. And, you know, in his books, Ram Dass talks about some of the powers that you get when you become enlightened, so forth and so on. And I think part of me was attracted to that, too. But really, overall, I just wanted to find peace in my life. I wanted to find a sense of serenity. So I got involved in yoga. And the whole thing that Ram Dass outlines is, you know, about having an enlightened master. So I went about looking for a teacher, a guru, someone to guide me, someone to be there to direct me in my progress. And I prayed for about 2 years, really, for some teacher to come into my life that would teach me and would guide me. And my prayers led me to a man named Amrit Desai. And Amrit Desai is still teaching and still doing classes and so forth. And he founded a place called Kripalu Center for Holistic Health. I lived there for 10 years. And what really was the part for me was that I got immersed totally in the yoga culture, and I got a chance to really get into it. And when I did, I just became amazed at all the knowledge and information and the wonder and the splendor of some of the ancient stories and things that I read about India. And I began to realize what a magnificent culture they had at one time and how powerful and beautiful it was. And it just drew me in. I did a lot of reading when I was at the yoga ashram. I was single. I was working all day long, but I had some time in the evenings to read. And I did a lot of reading. I did more reading then than I ever did in my life, than I've ever done since. And one of the books I read a lot about, was a book called the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata, and it's spelled Mahabharata, is a large book. The entire translation is like an encyclopedia. It's about 17 volumes. And it's an epic tale, basically, that was told about 5,000 years ago, of events that occurred around 5,000 years ago. And it's basically the story of two families, and you might say one is the bad guys and one is the good guys. And they're called the Pandavas. The Pandavas are the good guys. And among the Pandavas are Arjuna. You might have heard the word Arjuna. Arjuna was the great archer. And in the great battle that takes place at the end of that story, Krishna, Lord Krishna, is Arjuna's charioteer. And then there were four other Pandava brothers. They were all brothers. And they were fighting against the evil guys, which were known as the Kauravas. And there were 100 of the Kaurava brothers. And it's a long story. It's a very long story. But to say briefly, there's a lot of events that happen that culminate in a great battle that occurs, in which almost every warrior on the earth participates. Now, this was 5,000 years ago. I was doing a little research online and looking at websites that estimate what the population of the earth was back then. And I think they estimated between 4 and 5 million people lived on the earth. I mean, that's all there were. I mean, think about that. Only 5,000 years ago, and it was only about 5 million people on the earth. And today there are, 6 billion people? So you can see there's been quite a change. But there was a battle that took place at the end of the story, a big war that lasted 17 days. And this battle had over 2.5 million men in the battle. So that was possibly nearly every warrior that was alive on the planet at that time took place in this battle. And what's amazing about this battle is that at the end of this battle, there were only 7 or 8 men left alive. All of them perished, almost all of them perished. Now, that's another story which we're not going to have time to get into tonight. But Krishna was alive at that time, and Krishna was an incarnation of Lord Vishnu. Now, there's Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. These are the three main deities in ancient India. Brahma's the creator, Shiva's the destroyer, and Vishnu is the sustainer. Most of the chants that you hear, most of the Sanskrit mantra chants, are either to Vishnu or incarnations of Vishnu, or to Shiva or incarnations of Shiva. I don't know why, but there are very few Brahma chants. I don't know why there aren't more. I'm not sure. But there are lots of Vishnu, because the Vishnu was incarnated as Krishna, and there's lots of Krishna chants. And then before that, he was Ram, and there are lots of Ram chants from the Ramayana. You might have heard of the Ramayana. And then there's a lot of Shiva chants. Maheshwar, all these different names of Shiva come into play in the Shiva chants. And when you're chanting to Shiva, you're chanting to the god of destruction, and you're saying, you know, in a way, you're praying to the god within. You're saying, please purify me of all my impurities. Burn those out of me. Destroy those parts of myself. And when you're chanting to Vishnu, it's more like a bhakti yoga, which means yoga of devotion. It's more like just a god that is loving and kind, and just want, will give you your wishes, fulfill your wishes for you, is more when you're chanting to Krishna or Ram. That's like a basic thing. But this whole thing about chanting itself is, you have to understand that all these words in Sanskrit are mantras, and mantras are the power of sound. So by saying certain words, you invoke the vibrational quality of these words within your body. I mean, if you were talking like I'm talking right now, and you just put your hand on your chest as you're talking, you can feel the vibration of your own words as you're speaking. You can feel the resonance in your chest as you're speaking. Now, some words, some mantra words will resonate in different parts of the body. For example, the word Ram is the word that emanates from the heart chakra. There are 7 chakras in the body, and each has its own syllable, a 3-letter syllable. I don't know them all by heart, to be honest. I've seen charts that list them. There's like Lum and Hum and Sam and Ram. Anyway, Ram is, and it's a great guru once said to me, he said, no matter who you worship, whether it's Jesus or whether it's Krishna or Buddha or whether you worship Muhammad, when you reach a state of meditation where your heart chakra opens up spontaneously, you will start chanting the word Ram, and you won't know who Ram is, but you'll start saying that word. So when I think about Ram chants, I think about love. I think about the heart opening up and us being able to embrace and accept and be more of accept more in our life, love ourselves more, love others, be more accepting of that which we see around us, especially today when everything seems so out of whack, everything seems so mismatched, so much conflict. So there's a couple of Ram chants on my CD. Now, what I've done with this music is these chants are originally, these chants are mostly sung, and they're sung with like a harmonium, which is like a little bit like a squeeze box. It just has a nice little monotone or a couple notes playing at the same time, like a small organ. And then they have the drums in the background. And then that is sung, and there's a leader who sings, and then everybody responds, and they do a call response. And so in that manner, there's a leader, and everybody just gets high chanting this name of Ram, and there's a lot of traditional melodies that go along with this. What I've done is I've taken some traditional melodies, and I brought into it some of my experience as a rock and roll guitarist and a country western guitarist. I've played in a lot of bands in earlier in my life, and I love music that has a really good beat to it, and I love music that makes me want to dance. And really, Sanskrit chants were meant to dance to more than anything else. Like, you sing and you dance at the same time, and your whole body gets involved in worshiping the higher energies that are present in life. So it's not like you have to give up being a Christian or something to chant these. Really, these, even though they're Hindu deities, we're talking about energies that are found within all of us. And we're just opening up those energy channels, just as you would do as you were doing yoga or something, or meditation. So in this dark age of Kali that we were in, which actually began 5,000 years ago, they say that the fastest way to achieve enlightenment is through bhakti yoga. There's all kinds of yogas. There's hatha yoga, which is the postures that you see people doing all the time. There is karma yoga, which is the yoga of service and work. You work, and you burn off your karma, and you reach enlightenment that way. You can reach enlightenment through working without any attachment to the results. There's jnana yoga, which is yoga of the mind, and yoga of mastery of the mind, which is one of the more difficult paths, by the way, to accomplish. I'm trying to think. There's another one I wanted to mention. But then there's bhakti yoga, which is called the yoga of devotion. And yoga of devotion means basically worshiping God within you. It's becoming like a child to a father or a child to a mother. And you regard God in that way. And you surrender yourself to that God within you. And then that God within you makes everything happen for you. So it's like praying. And it's like praying in that way, you know, like as we pray, we say, you know, please help me, and then we surrender, and we let God take care of things. So chanting is like that. Chanting is bhakti yoga. It's the main form of bhakti yoga, and they say that in this Kali Yuga, chanting is the fastest way to God. So this first chant we're going to play, the second one actually, is going to be a Ram chant. It's called Shri Ram. And it has a guitar in the beginning, but the chant is an ancient chant that was originated from my guru's guru, whose name is Kripalu. And he was an amazing guy, which I'll tell you more about later in the show. But now we're going to listen to Shri Ram, and feel free to sing along. welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that song. I apologize for the big break after I started talking. I think the guys in the station got overwhelmed with other things and they didn't hear me or something. So we're going to be more astute about that the rest of the show, so apologize for that. So that was Sri Ram, and that's, I really love that chant. I mean, I don't know. I can't explain why I like it so much. I guess I like all the songs on my CD, but, and it's kind of hard to separate and be myself from it and be objective, but I really enjoyed making that particular song because I used to sing that at Kripalu Ashram when I lived there on acoustic guitar, and I enjoyed playing it just with the guitar myself. Of course, being all produced up like that with electric guitar and bass and drums is also fun to hear for me, but I used to just love just to sing it, and I just love that chant, which was written by Kripalu Banandaji. So we're talking about ancient India, and this was 5,000 years ago was a very significant time because it was the end of the previous age. It was ending, and that was the age of Dwapara. Dwapara age was ending, which had started almost a half a million years before. So this was very significant. At the end of each age, it's a very significant time, and it's promised that Vishnu, one of the three main gods, would always incarnate, would take a human form and come down with the sole purpose of cleansing the earth of all the accumulated demons who had come. But it also ushers in the new age, and this was ushered in at the battle that Krishna took part in, Arjuna, which was called the Battle at Kurukshetra. That was the name of this battlefield at the end of this massive book called the Mahabharata. And this battle that took place was the beginning of the age that we're in now, which is called the Age of Darkness or Kali Yuga. So it was a very significant time. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago when you think about it. I mean, can you imagine that our recorded history is so poor that we don't even have really accurate records for things that happened 5,000 years ago. So much that has happened that has gone on before, we have no idea. But the fact that we had this incarnation, it's just like Jesus. Jesus was here 2,000 years ago. And our records of him are rather sketchy. But that we have this man that was born named Krishna, who came down, took a human form, and now we have all these beautiful, wonderful chants about Krishna. And Krishna's life was very magical. There were all sorts of things about his life that were really magical. Even from birth, he was an enlightened being, and he knew what he was coming to the whole time. So we're going to do one of our Krishna chants right now. I actually have several. The first chant you heard was a Krishna Hare Krishna chant. And this is another Krishna chant. This one is called Krishna, and this is a song that I actually produced about 3 years ago. And it's just kind of a more of a happy chant with Krishna, more of an upbeat, upscale, fun, which is kind of how Krishna was. He was always had a smile on his face. No matter what was going on, he was always smiling. So we're going to hear the song Krishna, and we'll be right back after this. We'll be right back. this right now. There could be. That's entirely possible, but I don't think so. By the way, someone had called in and asked if we're taking calls, and I am taking calls, but not calls about readings or what you want to know in your life. If you want to talk about the songs or have questions or comments about your experience of chanting or anything like that, feel free to call in. I'd love to talk to you and have you on. So you can, but on the lines that are available. But we're not taking any more calls for readings at this point in the show. So this next chant we're going to play is one of the most ancient chants that exists, and it's called the Gayatri Mantra. It's I remember when I was in India, when I'm in India, and I've been there three times now, you can hear this chant playing on, like, stereos in the streets and everywhere, all around India, like almost every day. Now, not exactly this version, of course, as you're going to hear, but this chant is considered to be extremely powerful. It's one of the most ancient of the chants, and we don't even know when this chant originated, when it first began. But I have experienced being in very high states of meditation and chanting this chant, and I've had some profound experiences while chanting this chant. And by the way, most of the chants that there are really, the translations of them are all basically that I acknowledge the God within me, and I salute that Lord, which is all these wonderful things in life. So it's basically, they're songs that are basically an action of surrender and of acknowledgement of the higher qualities of life. That's basically what they are. So without further ado, we're going to play this chant called the Gayatri Mantra, or it's called Gayatri on my CD. Hope you enjoy it.
Om Purvabhava Swaha Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Deyo Yo Na Prachodayam. Savitur-varinyam Bhargo-devasya-vimahi Deyo-yunna-prachodayam Om Bhurbhuva Svaha Tat Savitur-varinyam Bhargo-devasya-vimahi Deyo yo na prachodayam Om Bhurbhuva Svaha Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Deyo yo na prachodayam Om tatsaviturvarinyam Bhargo devasya dhimahi deyo yo na prachodaya. Om Bhurbhuva Svaha tatsaviturvarinyam Bhargo devasya dhimahi deyo yo na prachodaya.
Feedback I've gotten from people so far is that they love that Gayatri chant. I hope you like it. It's kind of long, but it's very meditative. I play it in my car when I want to just calm down and relax because it just puts me into a calm space. By the way, I would love to hear any of your feedback about the music. If there's any song in particular that you like the most, if you wouldn't mind sending me an email, I'm very open to hearing what you have to say about it. I appreciate if you would take the time. Okay, now, there was a character in the Mahabharata whose name was Karna. And Karna was actually fighting with the bad guys. But it turned out he was a very interesting character because he was born, his father was actually the sun god. And his true identity, his true fatherhood and mother, who his mother was kept secret from him for most of his life. And he was meant to be a prince and a king, but because of his own karma, he was to live most of his life not being aware of that, not knowing his true identity, but always feeling like he deserved to be the most special one, or at least be one of the special ones in the world at that time. And he ended up fighting in the war for the bad guys. And he was the number one best warrior that had ever the earth had ever seen. He was actually better than Arjuna. And it turns out that, in fact, he was Arjuna's older brother. He was the eldest of the... There were actually six Pandavas, the good guys, but he was the firstborn. And he was born in secret, so they never knew they had a brother. And they ended up fighting against Arjuna. And Arjuna won the battle against Karna, and Karna died at Arjuna's hands, but not because he wasn't as good as Arjuna, but because his faith was stronger, that he wasn't meant to win that battle. So Karna was this beautiful man who was known to be the greatest of all warriors and also the greatest of all givers. He was born with magical armor on his body that was impenetrable. Nothing could penetrate it. It was made from the nectar of the gods. And because of this armor, he never could have been defeated. He was kind of like Achilles in the movie Troy, except he didn't have any weak parts. But the father of Arjuna, who was the lord of the gods named Indra, he approached Karna and asked Karna to give him his armor. Now, Karna was this man who would meditate in front of the sun every day for an hour, or actually in the morning until the noon sun appeared. And whoever came to him during his meditation in the morning, he would give them anything they asked of him. And Indra knew this, and in order to protect his son Arjuna, he went to Karna and asked him, he came disguised as a beggar and said, "I want your armor. I want that armor off your body. Give it to me. You say you'll give anything to anybody, so give it to me." And it's very amazing that Karna knew who this man was. He knew it was Indra in disguise. He knew it was a deception. He knew it was destined to mean his own death. And because he had made a commitment to giving, he still gave up the armor on his body. He cut it right off his body and gave it to Indra. And that's where he became known as the greatest giver who ever lived, because his commitment to giving never wavered. So I wrote a song for Karna. It doesn't have any words. It's just music. It's kind of a bittersweet melody, I think. It describes the beauty of him and also the sadness, because his life was tragic. He ended up dying in the great battle at the end. He was destined actually to be, he was meant to be the king of the entire earth. He would have been if he had not sided with the bad guys and not made his oaths. But he gave his loyalty, and he stood by his loyalty, and in doing so, he lost his life. So without further ado, this is the song I wrote for him called Karna's Song. I hope you enjoyed that. That was Karma's song. I do. It's just a sweet song. Not really, no words or anything. Just a sweet song to sort of embody the feeling that I have when I read about Karna and think about his life and how he lived his life. This next song is called Shiva, and this is this is the most, I would say, pop-sounding song on the CD. I really wanted something that was really like kind of like a dance song, like almost disco, but have Shiva words in there, which is Shiva is this destroyer energy, and Shiva wants to burn up all of our impurities so we can have the life that we want. So when you hear this song, think about Lord Shiva. He was also the one, by the way, that was supposedly the inventor of drums and of drums and dancing. He was called the Lord of the Dance. When you hear that song called Lord of the Dance, they're referring to Lord Shiva. So without further ado, here is the chant, the song Shiva off Bhakti Rock.
Shiva Hare Shiva Hare Shiva Hare Shiva
station host. And then I guess he forgot that we were coming back on. And so he just forgot. I don't know how long I was off the air or there was no sound. I hope you guys are still with me. But because we have a couple more chances to sing, to play for you tonight. Let's see, what we're going to go to next. I wrote this song about 3 years ago. I mean, I used to write a lot of songs, but and this is an English song. It's not a chant. And it's just a song about, it's called Closer to You. It's a song about my relationship with God within me and how I want him to be closer to me and how I'm searching for him and I feel him getting closer to me every day. So without further ado, here is Closer to You from the CD Bhakti Rock. Thanks for sticking around.
Voices echo in my head. I'm going
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that song, Closer to You. That's the only song on the CD that's not a Sanskrit. Well, Karna's song wasn't either, but it doesn't have a Sanskrit chanting on it. Hope you enjoyed it. We have just a couple more songs to go. If you have any comments or questions, you're welcome to call in about this music or what we're doing here tonight or anything about what I've discussed so far. We just have a couple more to go. We have a song called Sita Ram, which is a real rock and roll, I mean really rock and roll chant. And then after that, we have an instrumental called Journey. And this is just an instrumental song. It's kind of like my version of a Carlos Santana song. So we're going to play these back-to-back, and I'm going to call tonight. And I will see you guys back here next Monday night at 7:30. We're actually trying to get an earlier slot, especially for you East Coast people. But I'll let you know if that happens. We're hoping to get at some point a 6:30 p.m. slot here, which will be 9:30 out there. If we do manage to do that, you'll be hearing back from me about that on my website. Remember that this show and all the past shows can be listened to on the 7thunders.com website or on BBS Radio. But we have a link on our front page where you can listen to our shows there anytime you want. So without further ado, we're going to hear Sita Ram and then Journey. And have a good night, everybody.